Hello and a warm welcome to the Sweet Spot, your go-to golf tipping show, brought to you by The Racing Post. It's Jack Reeve and it's Steve Palmer. We will be looking back on the three tournaments that Steve previewed last week in the shape of the Australian Open, the South African Open and the Hero World Challenge. And two tournaments to look forward to this week. We have got the Alfred Dunhill Championship and the Grant Thornton Invitational. Steve will have a selection of tips for both of those. Steve, a week of mixed emotion last week. As always, the roller coaster of golf betting continues. It's a stressful game, this, isn't it?
It is. It was two bad tournaments and one good tournament, which meant a draw, really, between me and the bookies. I haven't had any losing week since the double. This is what I'm so euphoric about. You know, you're very vulnerable after a big win, aren't you, Jack? And in the 2 weeks since that, since we had the Hoggar-Aubert double, Luke Humphreys got me out of the soup in the darts. And then last week, Dean Burmester was a hero over the weekend in the South African Open. So, I'm delighted to still be on the same level as I was after the historic double.
I'm glad you mentioned the darts, because with the golf season coming to, you know, their little Christmas break, it's always nice to have that filler period, isn't it? And the darts just comes in. And who are you? Just quickly, I know this is a golf podcast. Are you on Humphreys to go well in that?
You're right, it is darts. Yeah, darts is all about Christmas, isn't it? You know, Dartmouth. I try not to let the darts distract me from the golf too much. But Luke Humphreys is my man for that. I'm fully behind Luke Humphreys, who's been winning everything lately. I think Michael Van Gerwen's lost a bit of his killer instinct. So, Luke Humphreys all the way for me in that, with beating Chris Dobie in the final. There you go.
I think
Humphreys will beat Dobie in an all-English darts final.
Cool, looking forward to that. Let's look back on last week's tournaments then. We'll start with the Australian Open. It was won by Joachim Niemann. It was a playoff victory for Joachim, his first win on the DP World Tour. Steve, I mean, if we were thinking we had a winner last week after round one, we would have assumed that we had the winner in the Australian Open. Cam Davis hit the front early on, going nine deep in on the Wednesday evening UK time, and kind of fell off. And then we thought, oh, goodness, you know, we should have been on Min Woo again. He hit the front and we thought, oh, we've missed it again. And then it was actually Joachim Niemann that came from behind to win in a playoff. It was an exciting tournament.
Absolutely, yeah. Joachim Niemann at 14-1. Yeah, obviously a great player available at 14-1. They're another live defector. Yeah, both DP Tour winners last week were live players. Yeah, I think Keith Pelly and Jay Monahan, I doubt they were texting thumbs up emojis on Sunday night, because this start of the DP World Tour season has been dominated by live golfers. You know, 75% of the DP World Tour events this season have been won by livers. I considered Niemann last week because, not only is he a quality player, that there was a stat that was catching my eye last week. I totally ignored it. Overseas winners in the Australian Open, six of the last nine Australian Opens have been won by non-Aussies. When you consider how many Australians are in the Australian Open field, it's a pretty eye-catching stat. But, I preferred the homegrown talent last week. Cameron Davis, as you say, liked the Lakes course, made his amazing start at the Lakes course. Got us all excited about the treble at that point. The treble was going great guns early doors, wasn't it? Until Victor Hovland teed off. We'll come to that later. I was pleased Min Woo Lee didn't win, because if my favourite player had won back-to-back titles without carrying any of my money, I would have been pretty angry.
it was a great win for Niemann. Just remind me, because I feel like I'm quite across golf, but it does confuse me. How do live players continue to play on events not on the live tour, or is it just made up as we go along?
Well, I think the latter, really. I mean, I think Bernd Wiesberg is the latest one who's written a little love letter to Keith Pelly to say, can I come back and play with you? And I think he's been accepted. But then there's others who were rejected, weren't there? And they were demanding big fines. Do you remember Sergio Garcia tried to make a late bid for the membership to get on the Ryder Cup team, and he was told where to go. So you're right. I try not to get too bogged down in the politics of it all. I mean, there's so much golf in politics weighing on our shoulders these days. Just throw it all to one side. All you've got to do as a punter is just focus on who's playing in the event and work out who's going to win that event. The rest of it is just noise that punters can do without, I'd say.
Yeah, so they were, from a betting perspective, disappointment in the Australian Open after a really fast start in that. So well done to Joachim Niemann. Let's talk about the South African Open. Now, we did find the winner in the South African Open. Dean Burmester's gone back to back. He won the Johannesburg Open as the favourite. He's won the South African Open as the favourite. Steve, you tipped him last week. He went over 300-1 in running, only made the cut by one shot. It was actually Jarvis, wasn't it, of our portfolio that was going well, and he kind of faded. I mean, it was topsy-turvy all the way through. But Burmester, once he hit the front on that Sunday, never looked like losing. It was experience that paid off for him.
I'd forgotten about Casey Jarvis until you told me. Like, yeah,
he nearly called him Cameron Jarvis. I might have done.
He was leading for a long way, and then the total capitulation over the weekend. You know, young lad, clearly not ready for it. But yeah, this was the good tournament. The South African Open was the one good tournament. Dean Burmester, an extremely worthy 7-1 winner, because, as you say, he got detached. He had a significant handicap. Did you know he was vomiting all over the golf course on Friday?
He didn't realize it was on the golf course. I heard he was ill. Yeah.
He had a virus going through his system, which may have affected him on Thursday as well, because he didn't play very well on Thursday. But then he was physically sick on the golf course on Friday. His caddy was suggesting to him midway through the round, maybe we should knock it on the head, mate. Got the Alfred Dunhill next week. He said, I'm going to battle on. I mean, he was getting dizzy over the putts. He said the putting was the biggest problem. He took 36 putts in round two. And then, as you say, made the cut on the mark. I mean, the funny thing was, Sky Sports coverage came on at 10 a.m. on that Friday. Burmester out very early, so there was no coverage of that round. And then when they do their morning wrap, they talk about the morning, what's going on in the morning. And this commentator was winding me up all week. They had this dozy new commentator on for the South African Open. And he said Burmester's missed the cut. He came on and they show Burmester miss his final birdie putt on the last hole. And he said, Burmester finished a level par and he's missed the cut. And I was just like, what are you talking about? Because, I mean, I knew he was in trouble. I knew it was in the balance, but I suspected he was going to sneak in. You said he went at 300. I thought at that point there might be people on the exchanges going, backing him at 1,000, because the commentators just, someone, if they'd had one too many tires, might say, oh, the commentator says Mr. Carl, I'll lay him, he can't win. But, he snuck in. He snuck in 59th place going into the weekend, 9 shots behind. Then he woke up on Saturday morning feeling better, thank the Lord. Shot 65 Saturday, 68 Sunday. Yeah, won easy in the end. Nearly won by 3 shots. So he had a massive handicap and still won by half the trade. You've got to take your hat off.
I think all of the chasing pack seems, you had, I think, Jaden Shaper, who's a bit of a sweet, well, was last season a sweet spot favourite. It was youth that didn't prevail in the end, wasn't it? You could just tell with Burmester, he just plotted his way around nicely. He made the putts he needed to, made a few crucial sort of par putts and just glided through. It was experience that paid.
Yeah, he's a quality player. He was on a golf course that really suited him. And obviously, we have to massively discuss him this week because he's going for the hat-trick, the Joburg Open, South African Open, Alfred Dunhill Championship hat-trick.
Absolutely. We'll get on to the previews for this week's tournaments shortly. We'll discuss the Hero World Challenge, Steve. It was won by Scotty Scheffler. We went with Victor Hovland. There was a bit of late money coming for Scotty Scheffler, wasn't there? And we're a bit intrigued as to why, and that was why. He was very impressive.
Yeah, I told you he had no chance. I said he'd completely gone at the game. He has a fantastic call. absolutely moronic comments. But I mean, I thought 5-1 was a dismal price. I still think 5-1 was a dismal price because when Scheffler left the Ryder Cup, he looked like a completely broken man. You know, he looked like he wanted to leave golf alone for a while. And he said he did. He didn't do a great deal of practice, but what he did do was clearly very effective. It was 2 months, wasn't it? Time's a great healer, Jack. I mean, you know that. You've had your heart broken many times. And 2 months was enough for Scheffler to get over the emotion of the, he was crying at the Ryder Cup, but the putting frustrations were bubbling over. But then he's recruited a new putting coach, isn't he? Phil Kenyon, who's like a genius putting coach, and he's cured many a player's putting problems. And they've come up with the answer. I think it's taking less wrist out of his putting stroke, from what I can gather. There was too many moving parts. And they put a new putter in the bag. Scotty Cameron's been ditched. And you'll find this very interesting as a man who plays a lot of golf and a rich man who can buy any tools he wishes. Olsen, have you ever heard of that? Olsen.
No, I saw it. It looked delightful. It was sort of a custom built thing, wasn't it? Yeah. It looked like a Scotty.
They make bespoke putters. So, yeah, you know, Olsen's going to get a big boost because suddenly Scotty Scheffler, having putted like an elephant for the whole year, he's got his Olsen in his hands and he's got Phil Kenyon's advice. And he for the first 3 days, he putted really well. Not quite as good on Sunday, but, you know, huge encouragement for Scheffler fans on the greens. He's got his new look. He got the beard going, didn't he?
Yeah.
The bearded Scheffler. So, I got it wrong about Scheffler. I thought he needed longer off, but 2 months was enough to heal that broken heart.
It was. I texted you during the tournament as Victor was having a few problems, and I said, "Oh, you know, we've got this one wrong, Steve." And you made a comment which I found interesting, and maybe it was the emotion of the moment, but you said the improvements of his short game have been overstated a little bit. Do you still think there's work to be done with Victor's short game?
Well, I think I was having a fit of pique at that time because he just messed up a chip. I mean, he has improved, but yeah, I think the commentators bang on about the improvements a bit too much. It's only a slight improvement. It's not huge. I mean, what frustrated me about Victor Hovland was the fact that something was amiss, wasn't it? Because he was the only big name player who didn't turn up for a media conference, a pre-tournament media conference. I was fretting, wasn't I? I was flapping like a canary. Texting you every 5 minutes going, still not done it. Every minute that ticked by, I was getting more and more concerned because why would he not do a media conference? He's going for the hat trick of Hero World Challenges. You know, he's the main attraction for me, but it didn't happen. So I assume there was some sort of illness there. I can't think of any other reason why I wouldn't have done a media conference. And the each way treble that I was sort of foaming at the mouth, the excitement about last week, was going well until Hovland teed off. And he opened with a pair of 73s. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. You just couldn't hear from Victor Hovland. There was no, it was like Victor Hovland didn't exist for the whole week. And he was supposed to be the main attraction. And then I still haven't heard from Victor Hovland, have you?
But then, no, he's not called. He hasn't sent a letter.
Did they interview him on Sunday? Because he outscored everyone on Sunday. So yeah. I think like Burmester, I think perhaps he was ill at the start of the week, got better. And then he shot 63 on Sunday to rocket up to 10th place. So who knows? But yeah, that was frustrating.
If any of our viewers have heard from Victor Hovland, then please do let us know. Two other takeaways from me, Steve, in the Hero World Challenge. Number one, Tiger Woods is absolutely jacked nowadays. It looks like a bodybuilder. And number two, Will Zalatoris' putting has somehow got worse.
Tiger Woods is incredible now, isn't he? Because he's just overcompensated, isn't he? Because obviously, with the car crash and everything, his legs unfortunately have sort of withered away, and there's not a lot he can do to get that calf bigger. You know, he could do as many sort of whatever they do in the gym, and it still won't work. So he's going to have these little legs, but he's overcompensated by turning himself into the Incredible Hulk. I mean, it was encouraging that the speed of his swing, speed was there. You know, 300-yard drives, pretty easy. Good fitness, just lacking sharpness, wasn't he? He says he can play a tournament a month next year. I think these were incredible comments because, we were uncertain whether Tiger was going to become a ceremonial golfer, weren't we? I think he was uncertain. But that was encouraging last week, and he's got some thinking to do now. You know, is he seriously going to knuckle down and try and win majors again? I'd love him to do that. I'd love him to have one last real big go. Or is he going to become a ceremonial golfer? I think the first couple of events he plays next year are absolutely pivotal for the rest of his career. If they're encouraging, you know, he's going to play Riviera, isn't he? So if he starts well and it's encouraging at the start of next year, I think he'll get a proper caddy. Because at the moment, he hasn't got a caddy. Obviously, Joe LeCarver's gone off to Patrick Cantlay. He's Patrick Cantlay's caddy now. If Wood starts the year encouragingly, he'll get a proper caddy, he'll knuckle down, try and win the Masters. If he doesn't start, I think he'll just go, all right, I'm a ceremonial golfer, and Charlie Woods will be his caddy. I think he'll, in the majors, you know, he'll just give his son the experience of caddying in majors.
It was just nice to watch Tiger, and like the last few times I've seen him play, it's almost been like, I've almost screamed at it a little bit because he looks in so much pain, and it's just looked a really uncomfortable experience.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that this time around. As you said, the speed of his kind of swing was almost, you know, quicker than his peak. He was just throwing everything at it. Mm. It was nice to see him out there and enjoying it.
You're absolutely right, because the last time we saw him was at Augusta in the Masters, and it was horrible, wasn't it? He just, you know, he had to withdraw, and it was just all so sad. But then, the movement wise, he was fine. You know, the latest bit of surgery, a little bit of jiggery pokery. I mean, he's like the Bionic Man, isn't he? There's so many things have gone on, you know, and he's probably got a few knives still stuck in there. There's been so much action. But yeah, I was encouraged. I mean, we get carried away though, don't we? Yeah, you know, I got the Tiger shirt on here. I was so excited. I haven't taken it off since, but he finished 20 shots behind. But first tournament for Donkey's years. Let's see how he gets on in the Genesis. Let's see whether he can win another Masters.
Well, look, we saw Ronnie O'Sullivan rolling back the years in the snooker, didn't we? So hopefully we can see Tiger rolling back the years. That would be lovely. Steve, mixed emotions last week. Should we take a look to what we can look forward to this week?
Yeah. We've got three tournaments left this year, two this week, one next week. Let's have it.
Let's have it indeed. We'll start on the DP World Tour with the Alfred Dunhill Championship, this one at Leopard Creek Golf Club. Steve, as you take your sip of water, what can we expect from Leopard Creek?
Well, we're in Mail Lane, South Africa, 7,249 yards, par 72, four par fives. Another Gary Player designed course, opened in 1996. First hosted on the Sunshine Tour in their Tour Championship 2001 to 2004. Then the Alfred Dunhill moved here in 2004, been there ever since. We didn't have an Alfred Dunhill in 2017 because the course was being renovated. You know, much changed that year. And then we didn't have one in 2021 due to COVID-19. We've also got to throw the African Amateur Championship at Formbrook Students, 2016 to 2020, plus last year and this year. Thursday morning, we get a couple of showers. There's a threat of thunder on Sunday afternoon, but it's set fair in between those times. Windless skies throughout. 156 runners going to post.
Really like this little South African swing that we have this time of year. Always fun to watch. Right, let's take a look then at the top of the market. He's won twice in the last 2 weeks. Dean Burmester, once again, the favourite for this one. 7-1. Next best, biggest, double the price. Louis Oosthuizen, 14s. Christian Bezuidenhout, 14-1. Brandon Grace, 14-1. Thriston, the Piston Lawrence, 16s. Eric Van Rooyen, 16-1. Dan Bradbury, 25s. Bigger the rest. Steve, Dean Burmester going for the hat trick. Can he do three tournaments? Can he win three tournaments in a row? Is he your best bet this week?
He's not my best bet this week. I can discuss him now if you wish, or we can do him at the end.
We'll do it at the end. We'll have your main selection instead.
The main selection, the 16-1 just gone, unfortunately. 14-1, still more than fair. Christian Bezuidenhout, who is tailor-made for the modern Leopard Creek. I mentioned those changes in 2017. Very significant changes. It used to be much easier, this course. Charles Schwartzwell once carded a 24 under par total in at Leopard Creek. It used to be a bomber's track. Aggressive drivers made hay. But they changed the turf in 2017 to a more fast-running grass. They brought the fairway bunkers more into play. From 2018 onwards, we've had a tougher, firmer, faster Leopard Creek. You need to be accurate from tee to green. You need to excel around the dance floors. Step forward, the South African candidate for success in those conditions, Mr. Christian Bezuidenhout. Laser-like irons, razor-sharp short game. Bezuidenhout won at Leopard Creek by four shots in 2020. His last 10 tournaments in South Africa have yielded form figures of 1, 15, 1, 1, 6, 5, 3, 26, 9, 17. An average finishing position in those 10 events of 8.4. Two lovely warm-up spins coming into this week. Ninth place in the Joburg Open with a cold putter. 17th place in the South African Open last week on a long course, which was playing. He hadn't played it in competition ever. So he's got the rust out of his system, nicely settled in back in South Africa. He's at the peak of his powers. He turns 30 in May. He got married in 2021, made his President's Cup debut in 2022, just become a father, we mentioned last week. He'll be entirely comfortable winning a second Alfred Dunhill this week. And I think he'll head into his first Christmas as a father with a nice, good-looking trophy to give to his son, who he's given a very, very solid name to. We must commend him for that too. Do you know
his name? No.
John.
John?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So, he's obviously thought,
he's like the only John in first school.
I don't know, but I mean, obviously his surname is so extravagant, and they've just decided, right, he's got an extravagant surname, let's give him a really solid one syllable first name. I think I got a lot of respect for Christian for doing that.
I often wonder, talking about kind of baby names, I wonder if there's any sort of little Barrys running around in reception in primary school. They can't be, can there?
Barry Bazinhart would have been a cracker, wouldn't it?
That would have been good.
But I think actual leopard on it, if I remember rightly, isn't it?
Oh, great for kids then. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, so hopefully a little John Bazin now will be playing with that on Christmas Day, and we're all happy. Everyone's happy.
I'm glad you mentioned Bazin now. I think I raised him last week because I was just expecting him for the last couple of tournaments for you to kind of put him up. So it's coming there.
Well, I was surprised. Remember, I was surprised he entered last week because he didn't enter this afternoon. He didn't like the Blair Atoll the previous year. But I think he was building towards this one. Get the rust out of the system in the Joburg Open and the South African Open, and then fly for this. And I mean, you could say he timed his run perfectly because he finished spectacularly on Sunday. Birdie, eagle finish. So, yeah, has he found his A game at the ideal time? I think he's by far the best value for this event.
Christian Bazinhart, Steve Palmer's main selection for the Alfred Dunhill. How many other tips for this one, Steve?
Oh, just one. Yeah, it's a two-pronged attack.
just the one other. So Bazinhart ran about 14-1, the second and the final selection for this tournament.
Yeah, we're going into bat with two sweet spot favourites this week. We bat these two guys quite a lot. The second one is Jaden Trey Shaper. You mentioned we backed a lot last year. He's 30-1 best now. Yeah, we've long touted Jaden Trey Shaper as the next Bernard Langer, and you must remember the 2020 Alfred Dunhill. We were on him at fancy prices for that. 3 years ago, he opens with rounds of 69, 67, 67. Yeah, there's huge excitement in the camp. Then he closed with a 75 to finish second. But yeah, he's only 19 at the time. He was outside the world's top 800. 3 years later, I suspect he may be ready to take an opportunity if it comes at Leopard Creek. He obviously had a great chance on Sunday, as you mentioned, in the South African Open. Blair Atoll, not as suitable as Leopard Creek, in my opinion. And, you know, teeing off with the lead on Sunday with Dean Burmester breathing down your neck. Far from ideal, wasn't it? So, yeah, I think he's got a much better chance of beating Burmester at Leopard Creek. Shaper was ninth in the Joburg Open, fifth last week in the Blair Atoll. I see that progression continuing. His putting strokes definitely come on leaps and bounds since we first fell in love with him 3 years ago. He was the best amateur in South Africa before he turned pro. He's going to take his career to the next level. It could happen this week.
The thing I've loved about Shapers is seeming kind of consistency. He's just always in and around the top of the leaderboards, never fully out of it. It just feels like it is coming, isn't it, this big win?
You're absolutely right. There's not a lot that can go wrong with that swing. You know, it's a short, solid swing. That's why I think he's the next Bernard Langer. I don't think he's going to make many mistakes. And he's precise. I like those things he wears on his arm as well. You got those sort of arm sheets.
Oh, like the sun sort of protectors.
Yeah. I don't know what they're called, but are they arm sheaths?
I don't know, but it doesn't sound right.
Let's just quickly brush that one under the carpet.
Steve, you're not going with Dean Burmester. He's around about 7-1. The other one at the top of the market that I'm sure will interest a few is Louis Oosthuizen. And we'll start with the reasons for not backing Burmester. After winning back to back.
Well, as I say, I doff my cap to Dean Burmester because he won despite carrying a handicap for at least 18 holes last week. You know, as I say, I was watching him on Thursday and really unimpressed. And yeah, maybe the illness had started then. But his Leopard Creek record is so poor. He played in four Alfred Dunhills without making a cut. He's missed seven cuts in 10 Leopard Creek starts. I guess I just can't have him at Leopard Creek. You know, he's for some reason this course hasn't suited him. Yes, just nowhere near as suitable as Blair Atoll. You know, maybe he gets distracted by the rhinos. He's the leading campaigner in the Save the Rhinos. We're all worried about the rhinos.
Yeah.
Burmester is the leader of Save the Rhinos. And, I think they have lots of debates about the rhinos when they get to Leopard Creek. Because there's rhinos everywhere. And they discuss the campaigns for the following year. So maybe he gets a little bit distracted by the rhinoceroses.
If you were to save one animal from extinction in the UK, what would you go for?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question, isn't
it? Is there any animal you look at and go, God, I love
that? Well, I like tigers, but you don't see many of them in the UK, do you? My son, I always say tiger's my favourite animal, but I haven't seen one of them in the UK apart from in a zoological park. And they always look so miserable, don't they, in the zoological parks, because they don't want to be in the zoological parks. I don't know. I like squirrels.
Squirrels are fun. I always get slightly sad when I see pheasants getting shot, because they're so majestic, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I just think, they're also quite an easy target as well. They're quite slow and cumbersome. And you think, shoot a pigeon or something a bit more, athletic.
Yeah, and they stand out, don't they? They're a bit colourful. Yeah. Yeah, might as well have a high-vis jacket on to make it a bit easier for you to shoot. Yeah, people eat pheasants, do they?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They don't just shoot them for fun. I've never eaten a pheasant.
Well, I think the hope is they get eaten. But I was talking to someone, because obviously the local pub that I go to is full of kind of farmers and people that like shoots. And they do say you get these, rich people coming down from London who go on these massive shoots. And then they just can't be bothered to kind of prepare them. So they just leave the carcasses lying around. It seems like a massive waste.
That's sickening.
If you're going to eat them, then, fair enough. But if you're just going to leave them, that feels a little bit distasteful to me.
I agree. Because pheasants are doing nobody any harm, are they? A nice sort of peaceful, pleasant animal. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to shoot any animal, shoot the sort of psycho ones. That's what I say. like Rottweilers. That's probably not going to go down well with Rottweiler fans. But there's plenty of animals out there that are really quite horrible, aren't they? Like rats. Yeah. What do they offer? Shoot rats. Shoot Rottweilers. Don't shoot pheasants.
I think that's a great manifesto to have, Steve. Right. Okay. That's the Alfred Dunhill Championship and our animal welfare speech done. We'll move over to the PGA Tour. We have a Grant Thornton Invitational. Now, this is an interesting format. It's a mixed event. We have a scramble, a foursomes, and a modified four ball. They've described it on their website as. It's at what's the course called? Tiburon.
Tiburon Golf Club.
Tiburon.
Yeah.
Talk us through the layout for this one, Steve.
Yes, the course is the Gold Course at Tiburon Golf Club, Naples, Florida. 7,382 yards off the men's tees, 6,595 yards off the women's tees, par 72, four par fives. This tournament was the QBE shootout, which was essentially a men's pairs event with the odd lady thrown in. Now it has become the Grant Thornton Invitational and an entirely mixed event. So we got 16 teams, one man, one lady in each team. The course is the same. It hosted the QBE shootout from 2001 until last year. Generous fairways, no rough, plenty of water on the course. The course also hosted the CME Group Tour Championship on the LPGA Tour. And we must mention that, because lots of form to go through there with all the ladies involved. And it's very important that we mention the format change. The QBE shootout format was scramble on day one, greensomes on day two, four balls on day three. For the Grant Thornton, we got scramble on day one, foursomes on day two, modified four balls on day three, as you say. Let's go through this, because this is
it's confusing, isn't it?
We got to get through it, though, I'm afraid. So this is a tougher format. That's the headline. This is a tougher format than the QBE shootout, because in greensomes in the QBE, both players hit off the tee and then you pick your best ball and then play alternate shot from there. Now we've got pure foursomes on the Saturday now. No margin for error in that. And then the modified element of the four balls that you mentioned there is that both players are going to tee off, but then they're going to switch balls. So you have to play your partner's ball after your first shot.
I've never heard of that, but it does sound good fun.
Well, it mixes things up. I mean, I guess they were worried about the man score in the four balls counting on too many of the holes. So in this modified format, you can't officially credit the man or the lady with the score that they get. Do you know what I mean? So it's much more of a team effort that way. I've never seen it before. It's as quirky as anything. But, the headline is it's tougher, slightly tougher format than the QBE shootout. And, that Saturday is going to sort the men from the boys and the ladies from the girls. The weather's great. sunny and warm, gentle breezes, small thunder threat on Sunday.
Okay, well, it should be an entertaining watch nonetheless. Let's take a look at the betting market. A competitive one. Finau and Cord are the favourites, 6-1. Åberg and Sagstrom, same price. You've got Rosenhull, 9-1. Fowler and Thompson, 10s. Degala, Zhang, 10s. Glover and Maguire, 12s. Bigger the rest. I mean, the biggest price in this, Steve, is 28-1. So you're not going to be getting anything too fancy in what looks a competitive lineup. How many selections are we having for this one?
We got two in this, so we got four selections this week. Two.
Okay, and who are we leading off with here?
Ludwig Åberg and Madeline Sagstrom at 15-2. What a partnership this is! You know, this pairing has got so much chemistry, and I'm worried about all sorts of acid and other liquids just spilling onto the golf course and damaging it. I think there's so much chemistry in this group that that they might have to call the tournament off because the course gets so damaged by the bubbling over and stuff. Yeah, we got, they're great friends for starters. Åberg's caddy, get this one. Åberg's caddy is Sagstrom's fiance.
No way.
Yeah. I mean, the Swedes are going to be so comfortable together this week. There's, and this is a tournament, given what we've just discussed. There's so much strategy involved in this tournament. This lot, I think, are just going to be able to telepathically communicate their tactics to each other because they're basically all the same person. But I mean, yeah, the chemistry is all well and good. But the main reason they're such a strong bet is because Ludwig Åberg is probably the best player in the world, or will be at some stage soon. Yeah, he's quickly won on both main tours, just ridiculously good last time out in the RSM Classic. You know, he's got pairs experience already, isn't he, from the most high pressure team tournament in golf, the Ryder Cup. He took to the Ryder Cup like a duck to water. The Grant Thornton's going to seem like a walk in the park in comparison to that. And he's got a big time partner. I mean, Sagstrom has played in three Solheim Cups, including the last one in September. She found some form just before the Solheim. She was thrilled with how many bogey-free rounds she was carding going into the Solheim. She said she's feeling more consistent than ever. She's 31 years of age. I don't think she's going to make many mistakes this week, which is probably all that Ludwig Åberg needs from her to get the job done here. Sagstrom, based in Orlando, Florida, Jack. Her one LPGA Tour title came in Florida, and she's shown a liking for Tiburon in the CME Group Tour Championship that we mentioned earlier. Form figures from the last four editions of 13, 22, 13, 16, and I'll be back.
Steve, for the audio listeners, I mean, there's such passion in behind Steve's selections that the vocal cords do become fatigued. But Steve does have pints of water on hand.
I don't get on with winter. I struggle with the onset of winter. I'm not.
It's probably the dampness of the shed. Maybe.
Yeah, I have got issues with winter, but I just make this point. Very interesting point.
Before you die.
Madeline Sagstrom has had no over par rounds in that 4-year stretch. So 16 rounds of par or better at this venue. So she's going to keep it neat and tidy. Åberg is going to be brilliant. We're in business.
Perfect. Well, have a cough and have a little sip, and I can fill time before you regain composure. I mean, Åberg's been so impressive, hasn't he? And Sagstrom with a really impressive CV. And I guess the joy of this, to an extent, is tears roll down your face.
It's just talking about Ludwig. It gets me very emotional. I mean, what a player.
I guess the joy of this tournament, to an extent, is that you can have little off periods and the other player can, you know, keep you ticking over. So you don't have to be, you know, don't have to have your A game for the entire week. Okay, so we've got Ludwig Åberg and Madeline Sagstrom, 6-1 joint favourites for the Grant Thornton. Who's up next, Steve?
Well, I'm not so sure over the final 2 days there's much of a hiding place, to be honest, Jack. I think the format, certainly on the Saturday, you're both going to have to be on your game, and then on the Sunday as well. I think the format changes make the weaker pairings less appealing than they were in the QBE shootout. There's no margin for error on the Saturday. And therefore, I make no apology for putting up the top two teams in the betting for this. I think Tony Finau and Nelly Korda are the big dangers to the Swedes. And if I was a horse racing tipster, and in a 16 runner horsey race, I put up, you know, two tips at 15 to 2 and 13 to 2, nobody would bat an eyelid. You know, because it's golf and we get big price winners in golf, I'll probably get some abuse of the stable. Send it my way. I can handle that abuse. You know, I always put my money where my mouth is. My conscience is clear, Jack. I think it's two teams will just be contesting the top of the leaderboard all week. It's a tough call between the two, actually, because Finau and Korda is a dream team as well. You can play each way. They're 50 odds. A 50 odds the first four. I mean, that won't appeal to many punters, but yeah, I've done that. It's personal choice because there's some rubbish teams in this, and I think the weak links will be exposed over the final two rounds. Yeah, I'll just have a sip of water, then I'll discuss Tony Finau and Nelly Korda. Have you got some thoughts on anything?
Yeah, I mean, on general life. I mean, what I would
let's get back to the pheasants.
If you want general life chat, the amount of rain we've had. It's been absolutely remarkable here in North. I mean, I'm just looking out my garden now. There's puddles everywhere. Yeah, I mean, it just hasn't stopped raining.
It's absolutely frightening, isn't it? But there are certainly more frightening places to live than East Anglia in this world. So
that's true.
Count your blessings, Steve. Count your blessings, son. Count your blessings. So, Tony Finau, a pretty regular starter in the QBE shootout. He knows Tiburon well, and he knows how to handle a female partner. If I can say that without being too controversial. Yeah. I mean, Lexi Thompson was Finau's partner in the 2017 QBE shootout. As I say, there was hardly any ladies competing in the QBE shootout. Finau has had that experience with a female partner, and they finished fourth in the 2017 QBE. They did it again in 2018 and finished seventh. And then just to show how good Finau was playing in that partnership, in 2019, Lexi Thompson jumped ship from Finau to Sean O'Hare, and they finished last. So Finau was doing the heavy lifting, and he'll have less heavy lifting to do this week because he's got an even stronger female as his sidekick. I mean, he couldn't ask for a better one, really. You know, a fellow Grant Thornton ambassador. Finau and Korda are both Grant Thornton ambassadors, and yeah, they're going together. She finished fifth in last year's QBE shootout, partnering Denny McCarthy. Yo, great effort. Called her one of the best female golfers in history. Her Tiburon form figures in the CME Group Tour Championship are 8-2-3-19-5-10-8. So she loves that track. Finau bounced back to form last week in the Hero World Challenge, finished fourth. I think it's match made in heaven, these two.
Okay, well, looking forward to it, Steve. Let's recap our selections before we depart. We start in the Alfred Dunhill, where we've got two. Fire away.
Christian Bezuidenhout, Jaden Trey Shaper.
And then two in the Grant Thornton Invitational.
Ludwig Obear.
Broke on for the rest of the day. Madeline Sagstrom. Tony Finau and Nelly Korda. You're going to regret doing that. It's Ludwig's fault your vocal cords are struggling somewhat.
Love Ludwig.
Exciting week ahead. We've obviously got the golf to look forward to, but it's fastly approaching. I'm sure most of our viewers will have this as well. Christmas party season, isn't it? And you're making a trip into the capital, which is very exciting.
Yeah. You know, I get nervous about my trips to the capital. I'm not a fan of the big smoke. I prefer the little smoke. I prefer ideally no smoke at all. I'm getting very nervous about my trip to the big smoke and hopefully I'll be able to speak by the time I get there. Yeah, don't expect much conversation from me today, Jack.
We can mime or do sign language or something.
That's it. No, I'm coming up today because train strike tomorrow, so I couldn't get there tomorrow.
Yeah.
Couldn't get there tomorrow. It's tomorrow night, the party. But I need to come up tonight because the train boys think they're not getting paid enough.
Very much looking forward to it, Steve.
I'm going to be started on that.
I think that's probably a good point to end before we offend many more people.
I must apologise to Rot. Yeah, there's a fella up the road who's got a Rottweiler. If he's watching that, he's not going to be very happy. Yeah, it's all good banter. But don't shoot Rottweilers.
He'll send them round and let the Rottweiler do his business.
You know what I was getting at. I don't like menacing animals. I just, more to the point, leave the pheasants alone. That was our main message, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. Just the one tournament to look ahead to next week, isn't it? The Mauritius Open, and then are we done for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Next week's the last hurrah, and then we'll retreat for a fortnight.
There we go. Steve, pleasure as always. If you're following in Steve with his selections, please do remember to do so responsibly. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. We will be back next week to preview the Mauritius Open. Until then, stay safe. Enjoy the golf. Go well.